Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Testing at UTBB Park by Michael Merlo. M-E-R-L-O at OAOA.com. The city of Odessa will hold a COVID-19 drive-through testing from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Thursday at UTPB Park. 200 free COVID-19 tests will be available for Ector County and Odessa residents. Odessa PIO Devin Sanchez said in a phone interview that no appointment or pre-registration is required and that people must enter on the north side of the park. You have to show proof that you are a resident of the city or the county or both, she said. The parking lot will not open until 7 a.m., the release detailed. People attending are also being advised to stay in their vehicles with their windows rolled up until they are approached by a mobile team member. Sanchez said that the city tracing staff was having a hard time contacting people with their test results because of a lack of reliable contact information provided, and that people getting tested should make sure to provide accurate contact information, including two phone numbers and an email address, to get their test results back. She also said that people should not block off the 191 service road if the parking lot is full, and that they should drive around the block until more spaces open up. During Wednesday's COVID-19 hospital briefing, Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin said that out of 753 positive cases, 43 are in the hospital, 16 are on the 7th floor, 15 are on the 8th floor, and 9 are in the critical care unit, with 6 of those patients on ventilators. 3 other patients are reportedly on the CCU overflow unit, and they are all on ventilators. 9 patients from Sienna Nursing and Rehabilitation, 1 patient from Focused Care at Odessa, 1 patient from Clover House, 4 patients from Andrews, and 2 patients from Pecos are in the hospital. Tippin reported that 432 tests are pending. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said that out of 1,327 tests, 242 are positive, 1,038 are negative, and 47 tests are pending. 15 patients are reportedly in the hospital, and 8 of them are on ventilators, she said. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan spoke about how coronavirus affects children. It's less likely to cause children to become symptomatic, and even of those that become symptomatic, they're less likely to have severe disease process, he said. He added that the multisystem inflammatory syndrome that children get from the virus is severe and has ended up with children being in ICU care. We don't know what the damage to the lungs in these children is, even if they are asymptomatic, he said. We actually don't know what the long-term effects of this disease on the children will be. Maybe a year from now or 2 years from now, that's still something that's being learned. The Ector County Health Department website detailed that out of 2,197 total positive cases, 1,511 are confirmed positive, and 686 are probable positive. 1,264 COVID-19 cases are active, 811 tests are pending, and 22 Ector County residents have died from COVID-19-related complications. The website also detailed that 911 COVID-19 patients have recovered from the virus. After the county updated their numbers, an MCH press release detailed that 2 more COVID-19 patients died on Wednesday afternoon. The first was reportedly a 60-year-old man from Odessa who tested positive at a private clinic and then was sent to the MCH emergency department, where he died. The second was reportedly was a 76-year-old man from Odessa who was admitted to the hospital on July 11th from home. MCH reported that both men had pre-existing conditions and that 22 MCH patients have died from COVID-19-related complications. A Wednesday Texas Tribune article detailed that Texas school districts that decide to stay virtual wouldn't lose state funding if the local health authority mandates that classrooms stay closed to students. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton said that the Ector County Health Authority, Dr. B.A. Janadu, would make that decision with the guidance of the commissioner's court and the judge. We would certainly rely on the health authority to make that decision. That's why we have the health authority in the first place, he said, adding that the health authority works for the commissioner's court. Shelton said it would be hard to make a decision about what the commissioner's court and Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes would do in 3 weeks when they don't know what the situation would be like. We can certainly start planning ahead to start setting our parameters to know what kind of guidelines we want to follow to make that decision, he said. For more information regarding the COVID-19 mobile testing, call 432-582-7969 or go to tinyurl.com/y8a8hz8r. The Texas Tribune article can be read on page 7A and online at tinyurl.com/YBWY5SPA. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 2,197. Ector County negative, 9,414 out of 12,422 tested, with 811 pending. 22 deaths. Recovered, 911. Active, 1,264. Midland County, 1,298 confirmed, 24 deaths. Texas, 282,365 confirmed, with 2,924,288 tested. Total Texas deaths, 3,432. U.S. cases, 3,416,428 total confirmed, and 135,991 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Quick hits. Virtual Ladies Retreat. Emmanuel Women's Ministry of Odessa has scheduled a virtual ladies retreat with Speaker Jessica Phillips from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Saturday. To register or for more information, call 661-8433 or email women@emmanuelodessa.com. Crawfish Boil. TCCMM and Texas Chaplains Corps have scheduled a crawfish boil, car and bike wash, and bike blessing from noon to 7 p.m. Saturday at the University Park Fellowship, 8650 Golder Avenue. There will be crawfish with all the fixings and also hot dogs and hamburgers. Cost for the wash will be motorcycles $35, cars $45, trucks $55, and semi-tractor, $75. Plate tickets are $15 online or $20 on-site. First responders will be $15 online and on-site. For plate tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/y8hn73bb. Virtual Bike MS. Virtual Bike MS, Cactus and Crude 2020, has been scheduled Saturday and Sunday. To register or for virtual ride details, visit tinyurl.com/ycynxe2s. Call for artists. Basin PBS is looking for an artist to paint a mural in the alley of the Ritz Theater, 207 North Main Street, Midland. The call is open to any artist in the Basin PBS viewing area. Andrews, Brewster, Crane, Ector, Glasscock, Jeff Davis, Loving, Martin, Midland, Pecos, Presidio, Reagan, Upton, Ward, and Winkler counties. Deadline is August 31st. To apply or for more information, visit www.publicartist.org/call.cfm?ID=2977 from staff reports. Closing prices posted $37.75, futures $41.20, natural gas $1.778. Benchmark U.S. rose 91 cents to $41.20 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. This is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Thursday, July 16th, 2020, local and state. Council awards Starbright Village Equipment by Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O at OAOA.com. City Council voted on multiple items during Tuesday's virtual City Council meeting, including awarding a bid to CED Energy Electrical Distribution for $94,050 for the purchase of 19 mini power packs for Starbright Village. Director of Parks and Recreation Steve Patton said during last week's Council work session that the new purchase would replace old equipment and would last for 10 years. Patton thanked Council after the award and said that he's received a lot of calls regarding Starbright Village and that people were looking forward to the event. Council also approved a professional services agreement with the Texas Coalition for Affordable Power, TCAP, for participation in a strategic hedging program, SHP, for the city to get wholesale energy. City Manager Michael Marrero said that instead of buying our electricity through fixed pricing, the SHP program will procure the energy 2 years in advance for 1 year. This provides the lowest pricing in the market, he said, adding that the agreement could help the city avoid certain expenses that long-term contracts perpetuate. Council approved the agreement unanimously. Council also tabled the allocation of Community Development Block Grant Coronavirus Funds, CDBG-CV, to multiple local nonprofits. Withdrawn applications changed the amount requested to a sum of $771,500, but Council still fell short, with CDBG-CV funds totaling $514,533. Council had a consensus for the allocation, except for $204,961 to Meals on Wheels for food assistance and $134,500 to Family Promise for a new trailer as a day center and transitional home for struggling families. The allocation was tabled because council wanted to see if they could get both of those projects funded. Because of the coronavirus pandemic and other federal government funding, City Public Information Officer Devin Sanchez said that council hopes to find a way to allocate money to all of those nonprofits needing funds. Council members also spoke about looking into coronavirus relief funds, CRF, for extra money. At the end of the meeting, District 4 Council Member Tom Sprouls also appointed Lance Marker to the Planning and Zoning Commission. Other action included approved the request by Investment Corporation of America to rezone Windsor Heights Addition. Approved ordinance to install traffic signals. Awarded professional services to conduct the City of Odessa facility needs assessment and conceptual planning for $224,867. Consider approval of annual renewal contract with Fox Scientific for the purchase of lab supplies. Man indicted on 2 counts of sexual assault of a child. OA News at OAOA.com. An Ector County grand jury indicted a 36-year-old man who reportedly sexually assaulted a teenage boy after they met on Grindr. Estevan Valdivias Jr. was indicted on 2 counts of sexual assault of a child, a second-degree felony. The 36-year-old man was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Wednesday with 2 bonds totaling $70,000, a jail employee said over the phone. Valdivias posted bail later that day. The indictments stem from an incident that was reported to the Ector County Sheriff's Office at around 1:23 a.m. May 25th, a previous Odessa American article detailed. ECSO was reportedly advised of a possible sexual assault at the Road Ranger, located at 10490 West Interstate 20. The victim's mother told deputies that her 15-year-old son had taken off with a man in an 18-wheeler who was later identified as Valdivias. Investigation showed that while the 15-year-old was with Valdivias, that the 36-year-old man had sexually assaulted him, an ECSO affidavit stated. The 15-year-old was given a forensic interview where he stated he had known Valdivias since the end of February after he met him on Grindr. The boy said during the time he and Valdivias have known each other, they have had sexual intercourse twice. The 15-year-old stated the first time they had sexual intercourse was 2 weeks after meeting, which was sometime in March, at Valdivias's RV, the affidavit stated. He stated the second time they had intercourse was on Monday in the parking lot of Murray Fly Elementary School, while in the bed of Valdivias's 18-wheeler. Valdivias was reportedly contacted at the ECSO, where he stated he was with a male subject he met on Tinder, but declined to provide any further information. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, July 16th, 2020. Opinion. Texas View. Coronavirus exposes the weaknesses of the child care system. The Point. If we can't ensure workers will have access to child care, we'll stall the recovery from this recession. When Governor Greg Abbott recently paused the reopening of Texas to slow the spread of the coronavirus, he also enacted new emergency health and safety standards for child care operations. That was a good move, but additional steps are needed if child care centers are going to be available when parents need to return to work. This is no easy task. Many child care centers are barely holding on during the pandemic, as parents stay home or worry about the risk of infection. Of course, the hard reality is that unless parents have more childcare options that they can trust, many will not go back to work, and that will hurt the economy. This issue is as important as reopening schools, but it hasn't received adequate attention. Child Care Relief, a coalition of business and early childhood education groups, estimated that about half of child care facilities will not survive the pandemic, eliminating about 4.5 million child care slots nationally. The Center for American Progress estimates that in Texas, 483,632 licensed child care slots, about 54%, are at risk of disappearing. Nor does it help that about 45% of Texas families live in child care deserts with little or no access to quality child care, and not surprisingly, these are in low-income neighborhoods. Coronavirus has exposed the fragility of child care. Even before the pandemic, the absence of quality facilities kept many parents of young children, mostly women, out of the labor force. A White House report last year estimated that in 2016, about 3.8 million non-disabled working-age parents with children under age 6 weren't in the labor force, and another 6.6 million parents with children under age 13 were working part-time because they couldn't increase their work hours without child care. By some estimates, child care issues collectively cost companies and workers about $57 billion each year. Strategically, this should be the time for local, state, and federal governments, as well as private industry, to work toward making sure that the core of the child care infrastructure survives the pandemic. Some are calling for another round of financial aid from Congress to rescue struggling child care centers. Our view is that if regional chambers of commerce, employers, and nonprofits aren't working to ensure employees will have access to child care during and after the pandemic, they'll be stalling the recovery from this recession. Our region already has a shortage of middle-skills workers, and lack of child care will only worsen a difficult situation. The economic recovery from this pandemic depends in large measure on whether workers can return to work. If child care systems, which were already facing financial instability prior to COVID-19, don't survive this crisis, the return to work will be greatly hindered. The Dallas Morning News. Guest View. Governor Abbott plays politics with health and education. By Richard Cherwitz, Ph.D. Texas Governor Greg Abbott late last week predicted the obvious about future cases of COVID-19 in the state, declaring that next week things, quote, will look worse, end quote. We must wonder what his first clue was. Last Friday, there were less than 1,000 ICU beds available throughout the state of Texas, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services, DSHS. Additionally, there were 9,869 COVID-19 positive patients hospitalized in Texas. The latest DSHS information shows that this was a record number of hospitalizations and that they have steadily increased since mid-June and likely will continue to increase. Make no mistake about it. The governor is partially to blame for the severity of the crisis, having prematurely opened the state prior to meeting CDC health gating criteria. He chose to side with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, a Texas politician who has made absurd and insensitive statements about the pandemic, business interests, and political preferences instead of the health of Texans. And now Abbott may be doubling down on that mistake, threatening to disallow mayors in major urban areas like Austin, Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio from issuing new stay-at-home orders for a set period of time until things are under control and a safe plan can be implemented. Hence, many of the lost lives, past and future, should be on the governor's conscience. To make matters worse, The governor also has refused to suspend the state of Texas assessments of academic readiness, STAR, standardized test. It makes no sense to spend $90 million this year to administer the Texas STAR test in the middle of a pandemic. After all, Texas is in the middle of an alarming spike in coronavirus cases. Houston, for example, has a 25% COVID-19 test positivity rate, and Texas has the highest number of uninsured individuals in the country. Abbott doesn't seem to realize that continuing high-stakes testing is an affront to every homeless student and every poor and vulnerable person who was struggling before this pandemic. What the governor is doing punishes schools and communities at a time when the state should be promoting safety, racial equity, as well as the academic, social, and emotional well-being of students and families. In short, allowing the administration of the STAR exam further exacerbates what we knew before the pandemic, that high-stakes testing measures poverty, not learning. Moreover, the governor seems unwilling to release the $1.2 billion CARES Act funds to local school districts. Instead, Abbott is holding the money hostage at the expense of students, teachers, and staff. This not only sabotages reopening plans at the local level, but places the most vulnerable students, for whom school is a safe haven, at increased risk. My argument, therefore, is that Texas has a governor who is playing a dangerous political game with both health and education of the state's citizens. This is unacceptable. I hope voters will not forget this when Abbott is up for re-election. While I respectfully disagree with most of the governor's policies on non-pandemic issues, prior to the pandemic, I at least thought he was a decent and moral person and believed his promise that he would allow policies to be based on data. I am no longer certain about that judgment. As a former University of Texas at Austin, UT, faculty member, Abbott is no longer one of our graduates for whom I am proud. UT's motto is, "What starts here changes the world." In the case of Abbott, perhaps that change may not be good. Dr. Richard Cherwitz is the Ernest A. Sharp Centennial Professor Emeritus in the Department of Communication Studies and in the Department of Rhetoric and Writing at the University of Texas at Austin. Richard Cherwitz. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, July 16th, 2020. Obituaries and death notices. Obituaries. Ruben Baeza, Baeza. Odessa. Ruben M. Baeza, Jr. left this world for his heavenly home far too soon on Monday, June 29th, 2020. Ruben is survived by his loving wife and best friend, Sherry Baeza. They were married in Odessa, Texas on April 21st, 2017. Ruben was preceded in death by his grandfathers, Francisco R. Baeza and Basilio D. Mora, Sr., and his father-in-law, Carrie Cox. Ruben is remembered by his adoring family, father Ruben V. Baeza, Sr., and mother Delilah M. Baeza, son Ruben James Baeza and wife Brianna, daughter Monica Baeza, son Elias Champ Baeza, stepsons Colton Helms and Matthew Fincher, and grandson Oliver Baeza, his brothers Anthony M. Baeza and Christopher M. Baeza, grandmothers Margarita V. Baeza and Epifania M. Mora, and mother-in-law Madalena Cox, brothers-in-law Paul Almanza and wife Shirley, Pete Almanza and wife Jan, and Aaron Cox, along with many aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends from all over. Ruben was born in Kermit, Texas, on August 19, 1971. Arrangements are entrusted to Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Visitation will be at Hubbard Kelly on Thursday, July 16th, 2020, 12 to 9 p.m. The family will be receiving guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Services for Reuben will be held on Friday, July 17th, 2020, at 11 a.m. at Kingdom Church, 3002 East University, Odessa, Texas, with Pastor Marcus Zuniga officiating. Graveside services will be immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery, 4100 North 1788, Midland, Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations in Reuben's honor be made to the Phoenix Program for PTSD treatment at the VA Hospital in Temple, Texas. Nancy Lynn Ludenbach Key, Odessa. Nancy Lynn Key, 39, of Odessa, passed peacefully into the arms of her Lord and Savior Monday, July 6th, 2020, at Medical Center Hospital. She was born April 9th, 1981, in Waco, to Linda Dorothy Kraft and George Donald Ludenbach. She was baptized into the Christian faith on May 10th, 1981. She married Brent Key on June 4th, 2011, in Odessa. Nancy lived out her faith, showing God's love in the many ways she served others. She worked as a social worker and had a heart for helping the elderly. Throughout her courageous fight with cancer, Nancy was always there to support and encourage other cancer patients. She enjoyed just about any craft, but her greatest joy came from being a mother to McKenna. Nancy is survived by her husband, Brent Taylor Key of Odessa, daughter McKenna Lynn Key of Odessa, parents Pastor Don and Linda Ludenbach of Odessa, brother Daniel Ludenbach and wife Sarah of San Antonio, sister Jennifer Rush and husband Ivan of Denton, half-brother Donald Wayne Ludenbach and wife Sandy of Kearns, Nebraska, parents-in-law Ronald and Carol Key of Odessa, brothers-in-law Shane Key of Lubbock and Joshua Key of Joliet, Illinois, and two nieces and three nephews. She is preceded in death by her grandparents, Howard and Dorothy Kraft, and Elizabeth Wallum. The family will receive friends for visitation on Friday, July 17th, 2020, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home in Odessa. A funeral service will be held Saturday, July 18th, 2020, at 10 a.m. at Grace Lutheran Church in Midland. A graveside service will be held Monday, July 20th, 2020, at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be sent to the Little Pink Houses of Hope, offering retreats for cancer patients and their families. Death notices. Mary Crider, Odessa. Mary Crider, 98, of Odessa, died Monday, July 13th, 2020, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Janelle Heaton, Arlington. Janelle Heaton, 91, died Tuesday, July 14th, 2020, in Bedford. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Refugio Rivera Cuco Orta, Jr., Odessa. Refugio Rivera Cuco Orta, Jr., 72, died Monday, July 13th, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, July 12th, 2020. Letters to the editor. Baker cares deeply about her principles. Thank you for indulging the candidate's proud husband with a final word. If you knew Mary, as I do, you would know the most honest and fairest person I have ever met. She never hesitates to tell you her mind because she cares deeply about her principles. She worked hard obtaining full tuition scholarships and graduating with honors. As lawyers know, her judicial clerkship is a prize awarded to a select few graduates. It is a high honor earned. In a profession dominated by men, Mary made partner at two firms, Hinkle and Kelly Hart, with those excellent attorneys endorsing her, as does my law firm, Cotton Bledsoe. Her current firm, Lynch Chapel, is known for Midland's white glove community service. Most importantly, Mary has run for the right reason, to serve us all as a strong Christian and ethical person. So the question Republicans need to answer is, do you want a smart, successful, hard-working, and servant-minded judge, well-versed in oil and gas and complex litigation, who is unbiased, honest, and forthright in her decisions? If that answer is yes, then Mary Baker is the person you should vote for as judge in the 142nd District Court. Joseph A. Baker. Rogers is well-versed in criminal law. The world appears to be in serious turmoil, and we are all likely to be impacted in one form or another. Of serious concern to me is the possibility of a significant increase in the crime rate and how it might impact my family, friends, community, and our country as a whole. Should that concern become a reality, it is imperative that we have a judicial system staffed by dedicated men and women who are well-versed in criminal law, as we need to feel confident that those who commit violent crimes and are proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt are meted sentences that are commensurate to their crimes. First-time offenders who commit nonviolent crimes, such as sometimes misguided youth, should also have the opportunity for probation and possibly adjudication. But what should be most important to us all is that no one should ever be imprisoned for a crime he or she did not commit, and we absolutely must have a judge for whom that concern is paramount. With those criteria in mind, my choice for 142nd District Court judge is native Midlander David Rogers, who is the only candidate who is board certified in criminal law. Rodney M. Robinson.
This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, July 12th, 2020. Other voices. Letters to the editor. Pick elected officials carefully. The local election is coming up for mayor and some city council vacancies. Please think of serving, helping, and supporting our community, the city of Odessa. We need independent thinking, strong and unbiased leaders. We need leaders, not followers. We need people that would keep the welfare of each one of us and of the whole community. We need people that are mindful of the fiscal responsibility that comes with the position. People that would think of us and not their friends when voting and spending taxpayer money. And when you decide to support any of the candidates, please bear in mind that this candidate will be representing you. Check their backgrounds, their experiences, their voting records, their community involvement. Does he, she care about you? Care about the city of Odessa, or he, she, there to get the power and influence of the position? Please stand and be counted, whether by running for a position or deciding who should be in that position. May God bless us all. Gloria G. Apollinario, Odessa. Division is the issue. Has anyone else noticed that lately people seem to be speaking in pronouncements? Black Lives Matter, we need a wall. The left, the right, Republicans, Democrats. The concept of Americans seems to either too easy or too hard for most groups, parties to actually adopt. 911 was awful, but for a while after it, we all banded together. Our heartbreak, outrage, and wrath made us one. It seems we are so splintered and divided that coming together is a fantasy. It's hard to relate to one another when we are advocating so hard for our personal opinion that we no longer listen to the other side. Is it that we are so jaded by events, both recent and the climactic insanity that has built up to the present? Personally, I'm exhausted by hearing about race. Race, race, race. A college dean was fired recently for saying, "Yes, black lives matter, but everyone's lives matter." She was in agreement with the BLM motto, yet dared to say we all should have some worth, some dignity, and the right to exist, basically. Are we jaded because we feel as if big government is going to do what it wants, regardless of our thoughts and opinions? Are we burned out knowing that a lot of nukes today are under the control of assorted people we wouldn't trust alone with our kids, or that we're governed by people who have proverbial feet of clay and lack of common sense? Personally, I am. It's okay for us to want to live in a perfect society, unrealistic but understandable, but factions are taking advantage of tragedies to push their agendas and trying way too hard and not thinking hard enough. Unless we want anarchy, we need police officers. Even though I've had a chip on my shoulder with authority since forever, objectively speaking, it takes a lot, I imagine, to risk your life every day and knowing you might not make it home. I imagine you will value your life more than the other guys, which is basic survival. If someone acts a fool and is noncompliant, they'll probably be shot. Pretty easy, right? It's time to realize not one of us is perfect and not one of us has all the answers. Without meaningful dialogue, we end up where we are now, bogged down in troubles with no regard for the concept of U.S. Mike Youngke, Odessa. Destruction is resort of idiots. Are the BLM idiots and the Antifa idiots really as dumb as they seem? I mean, they tore down statues of Frederick Douglass, a black man who had been a slave, became free, and worked against slavery. And in Massachusetts, they defaced a monument to the 54th Massachusetts Regiment, which was an all-black regiment that fought for the Union against slavery, and they defaced the Lincoln Monument in D.C. when he was president who freed the slaves. And the idiot whites, who are the Antifa, appear to only be looking for an excuse to break every law they can find. None of these activities are legitimate protests. Legitimate protests become criminal acts when the very first window is broken or the first cop is assaulted. Are the BLM members and the white liberals really as stupid as they appear to be? I'm leaning toward the affirmative. Sandy Milner, Odessa. Wear a mask. COVID-19 has been an exceedingly difficult illness to contain all over the world. There has been no effective treatment to this yet to be understood illness, and research is still in its infancy in trying to contain this disease. Despite attempts by various biotechnical and pharmaceutical companies to create an effective vaccine, it appears that day is not awfully close yet when there will be one. It is in such a situation that preventive measures should be taken in all seriousness to try and limit the damage done by this uncontainable problem. Despite strict stay-at-home policies instituted by most states all over the nation, the disease has spread rapidly. It is in this context that Governor Abbott, with advice from the COVID-19 Task Force, instituted the mandate for universal wearing of facial masks in Texas. It was probably not an easy decision for him to make, as there was certainly bound to be a lot of flak from various quarters, especially some who believe that this is an infringement of their rights. However, there is adequate data proving that wearing masks is effective in preventing transmission of the illness, and rate of transmission can be reduced to almost 1.5% if both the COVID-19 carrier and a healthy person exposed to the carrier wore masks. Almost 40% of transmissions happen before symptoms occur, and therefore wearing a mask by asymptomatic carriers can certainly reduce the rate of transmission, thus reinforcing the governor's mandate. It is my opinion, as a physician, that this mandate is definitely not an infringement of anyone's rights, but a dignified response to safeguard people from an illness that no one understands, but which everyone should know by now is transmitted by aerosolized droplets released by sneezing, coughing, or even by just talking. I certainly believe that this mandate overrides all political considerations and should be regarded as a humanitarian attempt at containing this pandemic. I wholeheartedly support this mandate and would request everyone to understand the emotions and science behind this action. I commend Governor Abbott for taking this bold step to help Texans fight this scourge. Satish Nayak, M.D., Member, Texas Medical Board, Odessa. Support the governor's mask mandate. This letter is to express strong support of Governor Abbott's statewide universal masking policy. While the previous stay-at-home executive order early in the pandemic helped us flatten the curve temporarily, since it was lifted, many Texans believe it is safe to resume normal life. However, we have seen a skyrocketing number of COVID-19 cases in not only our area, but across all of Texas. Our health risk has drastically increased, and the virus is just as contagious now as it ever was. Wearing a mask has been proven with clear scientific evidence to decrease the spread. Therefore, the importance of wearing masks in public cannot be stressed enough. Reducing this wave is of utmost importance because, if not, it will continue to jeopardize our businesses and way of life. This simple measure helps our community. We strongly support the governor's statewide universal masking policy. Permian Internal Medicine Associates, Suresh Prasad, MD, FACP, Kalpana Prasad, MD, FACP, Kimberly Sadillo, MSN, APRN, FNPC, Grace Andrade, MPAS, PAC. Jaundice and blood donation. Dear Dr. Roach, I am 70, living in the U.S. for the past 40 years, and relatively in good health. I was born and grew up in India. Almost 55 years ago, I had jaundice, yellow eyes. It was not uncommon to have jaundice there at a young age. Over 20 years ago, I went to a blood donation center in California to donate my blood. They tested my blood sample and told me that I was not qualified to donate because I had antibodies that showed that I'd had jaundice in the past. What problems will the recipient of my blood have? AR. Answer. While I can't be 100% sure, it's most likely that you had hepatitis B back when you were 15 or so. Hepatitis B was and is very common in India and can be spread through sex or sharing anything that can carry blood, including toothbrushes and razors. No one who has ever had hepatitis B may donate blood. What is important for you to do now is to find out whether there is any evidence of ongoing hepatitis. Any internist or gastroenterologist can look in your blood now to determine whether you have had hepatitis A, B, or C. Hepatitis B and C have chronic forms of active hepatitis, and these should be treated if you have them. You need not worry about the recipient. Your blood would not have been given. to your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
Dear Abby, man's indecision puts his marriage on shaky ground. Dear Abby, I have been with my husband for 29 years, 25 of them married. We have had good times and bad, like most couples, but over the last 4 years, things have changed. We came to a place where we both needed to decide whether we wanted to continue in our marriage. We went to counseling and I pursued my own personal growth, trying new things I was interested in and finding gratitude and happiness in my interests and career. My husband did the same thing. Now I have moved past it, forgiven, told my husband I love him, and hope he feels the same. You know what he said? He said he didn't know. He said he needs more time. Frankly, it has already been a long time, and it's upsetting to have to wait for him to make up his mind. If I become frustrated, he says, I don't have to stay, and I'm free to do what I want. Trouble is, I want my husband, and I want him to want me back. What do? I take good care of myself and have a healthy sex drive. Sex happens rarely, and I end up being rejected more often than not. He also had an emotional affair with a woman he knows, but he thinks I made too much out of it. That was about 18 months ago. Help, please. Uncoupling in Canada. Dear Uncoupling, going off and being independent may have been the wrong path to take. Your husband appears to have disconnected from you both physically and emotionally. When he went off and tried things he was interested in, among the things he tried may have been the woman with whom he had the affair. If you continue waiting for your husband to make up his mind, you could be sitting in limbo for years. You take care of yourself, have a healthy sex drive, and are entitled to a life. Now may be time to make one for yourself. Dear Abby, for the past year, my sister has been involved with a guy she went to high school with. He moved in with her and her 4-year-old son. Before he moved in, my sister, my mom, and I had a pretty decent relationship. Since this boyfriend has come into the picture, our relationship has become strained. He doesn't work, doesn't like her son, and she pays for everything. Rent, food, car payments, etc. Whatever he says, logical or not, she does it. Recently, my nephew's father reached out to me because she hasn't let him see their son. When I asked my sister why, she had no reasonable explanation. I don't know what to do at this point. She won't even let the family see my nephew now. What should I do? Mad in Maryland. Dear Mad, your sister's boyfriend has succeeded in isolating her, and it is a very dangerous red flag. That is what abusers do, and you should worry not only about her, but also her son, whom the boyfriend doesn't like. Could they be hiding the child because he has bruises? As to the father of the boy, if he has been contributing financially for his son, he may, with the help of the lawyer, be able to exert enough influence to get his visitations back. please suggest it. For now, all you can do is tell your sister you are concerned for her well-being because she is carrying the whole load. Tell her you are also concerned for the child and that no matter what, you love them both and will be there for them. She needs to hear it. And if necessary, contact Child Protection Services.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Cancer and a moon in Taurus until 12:19 a.m. when the moon enters Gemini. Happy birthday for Thursday, July 16, 2020. Seized by romantic impulses and an idealist at heart, you strive to bring excitement into your life. There can be surprise gains and losses this year. Your income might come from a different source. If single, it is impossible to tear you away from your love object, no matter how hopeless your chances of capturing it are. If attached, you are faithful, passionate, and nurturing. Your relationship is solid. Aries matches your passion. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 3 stars. Your clear and thoughtful communication assures future success. A neighbor can be more friendly. Be receptive if siblings plan a surprise or have other suggestions for gatherings. A reunion might be announced. Tonight, focus on yourself and release expectations involving others. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. A premonition of a time to come, especially involving your deeper purpose in life, is revealed. Your financial sector sets the pace today. Add to savings and pursue income-generating opportunities that arise. Tonight, wisely managing now has a favorable long-term impact. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 5 stars. Prepare to bask in a burst of sudden admiration, both among friends and at work. Wear your finest clothes and express your creative ideas with eloquence. Romance and its perfume surround you. Tonight, you'll tend to compare yourself to others. Don't give in. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. You will shy away from conflict even more than usual. Release old resentments as you prepare for a new season. Dreams hold valuable clues to wellness. Appreciate your peace and privacy. It is better to say less and listen more. Tonight, early bedtime. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. A new circle of friends is forming. Be receptive, accept invitations, and explore different events. Membership in a civic organization can be deeply satisfying. The feeling of cooperation and support prevails through today. You find peace in altruistic activities. Tonight, friends offer helpful suggestions. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. Today brings distractions and surprises to the workplace. Prepare to multitask and rise to the demands of the moment. Your status and reputation are at a turning point. Project the best image possible to VIPs. Tonight, you may assume a new position of leadership soon. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Your energy level will be high, making it seem easy to complete laborious projects with aplomb. It is a perfect day to pursue travel or new educational goals. There are surprises coming linked to home, partnerships, and career issues. Tonight, be true to yourself. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. Others respond strongly to you. Avoid confrontational types. Investments, inheritance funds, or a financial settlement might materialize. Today sheds light on the roles others play in your life and helps you select associates. Tonight, a talented person might be a source of inspiration. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 3 stars. A close relationship needs attention. Seek ways to turn this potentially competitive trend into an interesting camaraderie. Keep rivalry good-natured. Avoid anyone who is too difficult. Today brings actions on the part of others, which will affect you. Tonight, take the night off. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. Others are anxious to keep your attention. Be a very good listener. Valuable ideas will be presented. Today especially succeeds in you coordinating daily jobs with fitness programs and getting organized. Enlist help. Tonight, do not attempt to do everything yourself. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Today can bring a short attention span regarding love. You'll look for a companion who has bright ideas to discuss and isn't overly intense. A dash of fun and humor attracts you most, and you're changing your mind about many things. Tonight, love included. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 3 stars. The arrival of visitors might be a little unsettling. You play peacekeeper for argumentative household members. The roles of parents and children are changing, reflecting the passing of time. Tonight, you give considerable thought to where and how you really want to live. Born today, explorer Roald Amundsen, 1872, writer Tony Kushner, 1956, comedian Will Ferrell, 1967.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.